So, Real Adventures of Johnny Quest, huh? Isn't that like the first? It's got to be like the first animated documentary.
I think you're incorrect there.
What? I mean, it is real, though. I mean, they can't just call it real legally, and, you know, legally it has to be real. Are you telling me that the real Ghostbusters aren't real?
Hey, everybody, and welcome to Hyperspace Broadcasts, a podcast where we discuss our memories of a specific Toonami program before watching it and trying to determine if it was worth revisiting. I'm Michael Doak.
I'm Peter Eby.
And this week, we're talking about The Real Adventures of Johnny Quest, episodes 1 through 10. First off, a little bit of a history lesson. One thing that's kind of interesting about this show is that, we've talked at length already kind of about that it has CGI sequences in Quest World. But
certainly
one of the things that I discovered today while doing some cursory research is that actually this show is kind of a Robotech in that it's sort of two shows that got put together due to a buyout, essentially.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so basically what happened is, I guess the original show was sort of had a troubled development. They ended up making a season of it, and then they were going to be producing this other show called The New Johnny Quest, but that show got folded into The Real Adventures of Johnny Quest because Time Warner bought Turner. So basically, we have two seasons of the show that are quite different, apparently. And
oh boy.
Yeah, I'm really curious how that's going to happen, like what that's going to be like.
Why can't it just be as I remember, like just a good show through and through?
I mean, there's no telling that they're going to be that it's going to suddenly get bad. I mean, it could be good. It's just, you know, it's going to be different.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't have a lot of memories from this series besides the stuff I've covered a little before. Like, yeah, it's 3D. It's got really, they'd have these 3D sequences, this title sequence where they go through this, like, green and black, almost vector-looking tunnel that I thought was really cool. Like I said before, of course, it was like, this is a show that I looked at as a kid and was like, graphics just can't get better than this. Like,
yeah, right.
PS1 can't do this. Fucking can't get better than this. And now, of course, it's just embarrassing to look at. Way worse than even a reboot. That much has been said. Now, the only other thing I really remember about this show is that there was like one episode where Race Bannon said a swear, and I thought it was like the coolest thing in the world, and it definitely made the show good. I just remember him saying, "I feel like I've been to hell and back," and I was like, "Whoa!" He didn't say heck, which, to be fair, like they're really gonna like make him say, "I've been to heck and back." It's pretty lame.
Yeah, right. Well, it's like the one time that the Real Adventures of Johnny Quest is more hardcore than the censored Dragon Ball Z, pretty much.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like I've been to Hiffle and back.
Oh my god, yeah, it actually is. They couldn't say hell on that show. That's, wow. I didn't even consider
like
that.
I've been to the
Jesus
Home for Infinite Losers and then back again.
How did I forget the Home for Infinite Losers? Like, what an iconic piece of dumb censorship to just
that
forget.
That's like the cornerstone of terrible censorship. It's just that name. Oh, God.
Oh, my God. All right. Well, yeah, I mean, I don't really have a lot of memories of Johnny Quest, or rather The Real Adventures of Johnny Quest either. Obviously, I remember the title sequence, and I watched it recently, and it is, I will say that I think it holds up. It's still pretty cool to look at, mostly because the CG is just
the title
sort of
sequence,
vectors, so it doesn't look incredibly dated.
Yeah, The title sequence, yes. Anything else, I don't know.
Anything else looks like hot trash, of course, which is weird because also through research, I discovered that the CG was done by Blur Studios, who are still around and produce some impressive stuff.
They do like the craziest CG you see in video games. I know that much. They do like really good video game CG.
Yeah, like
that's good for them. They're still around.
Yeah, right. I mean, I guess I shouldn't be that surprised given the prominence of CG stuff, you know, in the years since.
But, I mean, you never know that those kind of companies that
develop
new technology.
Yeah, and visual effects companies go under all the time, pretty much.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I do have one memory, though, of an episode of this show, which I'm not sure why it sticks out to me, but there is an episode where they go to Easter Island, and it revealed both that the, like, iconic heads or... Oh, fuck. I forgot how to pronounce it, but...
Moai heads.
Yeah, yeah.
Or Maui heads? I don't know. Not Maui.
No.
Damn it. It's not
Maui heads. Moai. Or the American Gladiator Maui. I think that was his name.
Hang loose.
It involved the Easter Island heads, and it revealed two things about them. One, that below the heads were bodies, like, buried in the dirt. And
which is true.
Two, that they were made by aliens.
Which okay.
I'm not going to say that one's true. I think that may be false. I think they may have been made by humans. I'm pretty sure.
I wonder if that's a season two or a season one.
Yeah, right. Well, that's the thing is, I mean, I guess to build on that thing a little bit, the two seasons, apparently the first one was mostly had this very realistic tone or, you know, more realistic a tone. Like there weren't laser guns, for example.
Right.
The mechanical details were specific. It was very I would imagine there's some supernatural stuff, but not a ton. Like it's pretty down to earth,
yeah.
I believe. But the second season was more fantastical, so there were, like, ghosts and probably aliens. So I'm guessing it's a season two episode,
right.
But who knows? I have no way of knowing that until we see it.
It's a real Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Oh, God, yeah. Going from historical, biblical artifacts, or at least religious artifacts, to aliens.
Historical, though. I'm not going to call Indiana Jones, the originals, a historical movie.
Okay, well, historical is obviously...
Historical,
you know,
fiction.
No, obviously it's not even
that. It's a historical
that.
Like, fun movie.
The Ark of the Covenant is... what I meant was biblical, obviously, religious artifacts. Like, did the Ark of the Covenant actually exist?
Yeah.
Probably not.
I'm not gonna scream about that. It's just.
I mean, it might have.
I just
probably
was questioning
didn't
the
melt
historical
people's faces.
Veracity. Yeah, I wish it did though.
I guess.
Well,
yeah, that would have been super.
That's
cool.
About all we have to say about Johnny Quest.
Yeah, obviously we're off the rails already because Johnny Quest is something that neither of us have that much familiarity with. My understanding is that the villain's name is Surd, which is awesome. S-U-R-D.
Surd spelt. Yeah, spelt like turd.
But with an S. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and this is a show that I feel like I actually watched pre-Toonami. Like, I think I watched it when it was on Cartoon Network proper. I might even be completely wrong with that, but I'm pretty sure I watched it before, like, before it aired on Toonami.
Yeah, right. Well, that's one of the things that's interesting to me as we go kind of further down this rabbit hole, is that... I'm starting to question if I saw these things on Toonami or just Cartoon Network pre-Toonami. Because
I know they re-aired some of their more action-packed content on Toonami later on.
Yeah, for sure. But like Thundercats and Super Friends even, and this, I guess.
Sure.
It's the sort of thing that I do remember watching, but I don't remember Moltar really at all. But also, I feel like that was before Toonami had the, like, strength of Brandon that it started to get in the Tom eras.
Sure, sure. And well, you were kind of a post-Moltar guy anyway, right?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm not really sure.
Yeah. I know I remember from my kids seeing like the Maltar stuff a little bit, but not too much. Not too much. Mostly the Tom era. I think anyone will remember Tom era more than anything else, though, because, like you said, the strength of branding and stuff like that.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's that, and also, like, I was older, obviously, so I would have remembered it better, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm excited to watch this regardless. Like, from what I've seen of it, I'm hoping that it is a combination of... Like, I'm kind of hoping for a reboot situation, honestly. I'm hoping for a show that looks dated in its presentation, but still kind of holds up, at least sort of, through the writing.
Yeah,
like
I'm with you there.
If, because I'm sure that the traditional 2D animation looks very good. I mean, it's, you know, 90s animation, like, it's probably going to look good.
Right.
I'm wondering how much Quest World plays a part, because that's obviously going to be the stuff that'll be hard to stomach. But
I do remember as a kid always wanting Quest World more than anything else, though. And like, if they had an episode with no Quest World, I'd just be pissed.
Yeah.
And now I feel like it's just going to be the complete opposite.
Yeah, I'm sure that that'll be exactly correct. I'm hoping there's at least one episode that's just in Quest World.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well,
let's check this shit out then.
Yeah, let's get to it. When we come back, we will be talking about Johnny Quest.
Welcome to Quest World. Warning. Don't be afraid.
Yeah, we won't hurt you.
Hey, everybody. It's Michael here. I am recording this quite late at night or early in the morning, depending on how you look at it, before I board a plane back to Michigan, which means two things for you. One, if this episode is a little rough around the edges in any way, I apologize. I'm going on vacation soon, and I'm excited. And two, it means that the next episode, Peter and I will actually be in the same room, so maybe there will be a little more chemistry than there usually is. Who knows? Anyway, I'm just going to give you the normal spiel about other ways you can help support the podcast. Subscribing on Blueberry, iTunes, Stitcher, or TuneIn lets us know that you're listening, and obviously that's super helpful for us. Also, feel free to interact with us, either on our Twitter, @HBPod, or Facebook page, facebook.com/HBPod. We post screenshots, video clips, we've been posting kind of Throwback Thursday old episodes of the podcast, some with better audio, some just with new art. And it's generally a good time. You should totally, totally check it out. Our next episode is going to be up on May 19th, and we'll be back for our thoughts on this block of The Real Adventures of Johnny Quest in just a moment.
The Real Adventures of Johnny Quest now continue on Cartoon Network.
Hey, and welcome back from the break. We have watched the first 10 episodes of The Real Adventures of Johnny Quest, and before we begin, I guess... obviously, this show is not really, it doesn't really have an overarching narrative, like there's no plot stuff, so we're going to be kind of talking about individual episodes we found interesting, and before we get to that, however, I'd like to just explain there are right now two villains that are kind of continuous throughout these episodes. They each had two episodes devoted to them. They are Jeremiah Surd, who is basically the Quest World villain, and then there is Ezekiel Rage, who is kind of a non-Quest World villain. And
yeah, he's kind of a ex-CIA crazy religious zealot who wants to just blow everything up.
Yeah, right. And Jeremiah Surd's basically a mad scientist who was kind of a foe of Race Bannon, who is now kind of disabled, Stephen Hawking situation, where he's typing out his speech. And I guess to get into the episodes, because one of the ones that's probably worth talking about is that episode of Squid...
A Squid to Quest World.
Yeah, so in Escape to Quest World, essentially it tells a little bit of Jeremiah Surd's, like, backstory involving Race Bannon, and then gets into the modern day where he has apparently stashed vats of some kind of nerve gas from back in the day. These have been discovered. So Reyes and Dr. Quest go to kind of, I guess, recover it and prevent it from spreading. But
yeah, he's got them all around Chicago or something.
Yeah, right, a major metropolitan area. And they accidentally release the gas, so Johnny, Jesse, and Haji are required to basically figure out a way to save their parents. And the solution that Johnny comes up with is tracking down Jeremiah Surd and allowing him access to Quest World, which is the CGI zone of this show.
Yeah, it's their virtual reality world within the show. They go to it sometimes, not every episode, not maybe like a little less than half the episodes.
I'm not even. I only really recall like three episodes.
Yeah,
that had it in this block. I mean, maybe it'll get more common in the future, but essentially, Johnny decides that, you know, based on Surd's condition, if they give him access to Quest World, where he can, you know, live this virtual life, I guess, he'll help them out. Of course, he doesn't, and he basically manages to kind of hack himself into Quest World, so he shows up in it later in the show, occasionally.
Yeah, and of course, Quest World looks completely terrible. It is pretty damn ugly.
Yeah.
Bad CG. The animations are, I think, the worst part of it, because everyone is like kind of jittering in this way. Like, they're supposed to be like kind of, they're fairly realistic and detailed 3D models, I guess, for the time, but you know, they're like 3D models of the cartoon characters, and it's just so freaky to me. Like, there's something about it that's really unnerving.
Yeah, I mean, I think that talking about Questworld that much, like, I mean, it's kind of retreading the reboot thing. Like, it looks incredibly dated, obviously, and it's hard to say much more than that about it.
It does look worse than reboot ever looked.
Oh yeah, certainly. We'll but say that. Yeah, sure. But it also predates it by a bit, and it is pretty insufferable to see, but fortunately we don't spend a lot of time in Quest World. The vast majority of the show is traditional 2D animation with some like computer generated effects, like water usually is CG.
One episode that I found was interesting was there's an episode called Manhattan Man-Eater, and it's a really weird, crazy episode. It all takes place in New York, obviously, and it's just like about this thing that's killing people, and it's like they think it's a serial killer, but it turns out it's a white tiger.
Yeah, but it should be mentioned though that makes it sound like there's any mystery to the viewer whether or not it's a white tiger, when there is not. You are shown that it is a white tiger literally in like the opening scene to establish the storyline.
And what's crazy is, like, apparently this is a world without forensic science at all. Because, like, it'd be so... like, of course they're going to be able to check, like, bite marks and scratches and shit and be like, oh, an animal did this. Like, they're not going to be like, oh, man, the bite pattern, this must be one fucked up serial killer to use a giant cat's mouth.
Yeah, right.
To rip people up.
It's a pretty weird episode. And what I find strange about it, and I gotta say, like, this is a thing that I've said before about other shows, but I gotta give the creators of this show some credit for legitimately addressing former criticisms of like the old Johnny Quest stuff and writing it into the text of the show. Like, one of the weirder parts of that episode is that there's this like TV personality who is kind of a newscaster who I guess is a Geraldo Rivera type, who's kind of a shock journalist dude.
Yeah.
Who's trying to get footage of the monster being killed or whatever. And he's extremely racist towards Haji And, you know, Haji shuts him down, of course, but it's kind of, it's crazy to me to see a show, like, you know, for kids that so directly addresses that.
And in, like, real racist terms, like, he calls him a towel head. Like, it's like, Jesus Christ.
Well,
like,
to be fair, he says, like, what is that, a towel on your head or something? It isn't quite, it's almost there, but it's, yeah.
It was some of the other stuff. Another guy, and then there's another guy in the episode who's racist to him also. Just calls him, like, what does he call him? Like, Kemosabe or something. And it's like, what? First of all, it's confusing. And also, God. Yeah, and it's really kind of crazy that they just directly address that and show you that, you know, characters just being racist and shitty. And obviously not in a way that, like, you know, glamorizes it or anything. And that whole episode's so crazy because, like, they meet up with these, like, street tough guys who, like, are tricked into trying to hunt down this.
Well, they're not tricked. There's a reward posted for managing to get the tigers. Yeah. So they kidnap Johnny and Haji and Jesse, I think, in order to help them find the, I guess, beast.
And then they have, like, a change of heart at the end, and the guy, like, jumps and gets in front of the gun to, like, block this, master hunter poacher dude from killing the tiger. And it's just like, it, I know it's a very weird episode, like I enjoyed it, but it's just like it's an episode that's all over the place and just very crazy.
Yeah, and again, it does some things that I wasn't expecting this show to ever do, which is interesting to see. Like, it's surprising, at least. Let me talk about an episode that I think is pretty weird in a similar vein. So, one of the things about this show is that, for the most part, it's fairly realistic. There are some exceptions, mm-hmm. but for the most part, it seems like stuff that could actually happen. Like, it's that sort of... I guess it's like... well,
it's at least a grounded science fiction.
Yeah, right. And it's the
somewhat.
Yeah. And I think I'll again compare it to Indiana Jones in a way that obviously Indiana Jones is like pulp and it's got some basically magic in it. But at the same time, it feels like something kind of believable.
Mm.
Like there's something about it. I think it's just the self-contained aspect of it that I find believable. Like, that's the thing for me that always seems to make a sort of fantastic story seem like it could happen, is it not being this huge thing. The final episode that we watched, episode 10, titled Alien in Washington, it is literally about the vice president being an alien and there being this alien race who are upset because, you know, the U.S. military is some kind of satellite grid.
Yeah, yeah. They're, like, doing experiments in space or something like that. They're planning on it. And I think something about it is, like, catastrophic or potentially catastrophic to the universe or at least to the alien race, I guess. And so they start sending messages through Questworld, of all things. So, like, Johnny starts getting, like, hacked during his own, like, cool light bike racer game. Suddenly the alien comes in and starts playing with him pretty much in like a giant cooler bike, which is a really weird kind of part. But I mean, obviously I don't know it's an alien. It's just like this other player. And so all this like crazy imagery and stuff of like these messages kind of trying to be sent through Questworld, which I thought was kind of cool. Very surreal for this kind of thing. But yeah. And then the show that normally has like rational explanations behind extraordinary things happening just has like this super alien who became the vice president and can like create beams that blow everything up.
Yeah, yeah.
He's just like, thanks for helping, and then he like disappears in a flash and flies off.
Yeah, and they I guess somehow cover it up by saying the vice president died. It's just,
yeah,
it's a really weird plot for me because it seems like the kind of thing that would be next to impossible to keep quiet. Like, I don't know, if a U.S. yeah. fucking aircraft carrier went down in a whirlpool randomly, I feel like
oh, yeah, that's true.
You would hear about it. like the vice president dying just out of nowhere. Like, how I don't know. Like, how is this not a thing that has actual far-reaching consequences? It's so weird to me that they can cover it up simply by Dr. Quest being like, well, we can't tell anyone about this. Okay, boys. And then that's it. Like, that's all that it gets.
That, by the way, that being a discussion that happens, I think, 3 times within these 10 episodes, is there's always a moment afterwards where it's like, we can't tell anyone about this, can we? Like, usually to protect an animal or something like that. Like, oh, we found this gigantic, awesome squid. We probably shouldn't tell the world about it. It'll just get hunted to death. Or we found the elephant graveyard. Can't tell anyone. They'll get hunted to death. Like, but it's just so weird to have that scene happen more than once. They're just like, well, I guess we can't tell anyone. No, don't. Okay. Another episode that I enjoyed was the Ezekiel Rage episode. Not the first one, but the second one, which is kind of a prequel or shows the origin of this guy. And he was kind of like a secret agent, but also family man kind of thing, and almost got caught, and like his car goes off the road and he's trying to save his family, and his family dies because his government kind of didn't help him out. The U.S. government, I guess. So he becomes this like crazed zealot who holds the Book of Rage and he keeps preaching about this crap, you know, and trying all these like doomsday shit and getting kind of cultists to follow him. And trying to do like these big doomsday plots, but I enjoyed that episode in part. I like his tragic backstory, even if it is kind of just like, you know, I don't know, maybe like obvious, like this is why this guy's bad, and
you
should feel sympathetic for him, kind of stuff. I like that the book he carries around that you think is like a book of like his sermons or writings or whatever is just a family like a family album. With like pictures of his dead wife and kid and stuff like that. And also the use of forklifts in that episode is fantastic. Basically what happens is that the Quest crew are meeting up with their friend who's a naturalist and like out in like, I don't know, New Mexico or something like that, some like desert area. And they accidentally come across a stockpile of nerve gas and, more nerve gas, by the way. I don't know.
Yeah, right, element. Right.
But stores of nerve gas from, like, the Cold War, along with, like, nuclear waste. And they find Ezekiel Rage there, and that he's planning on using it to just kill tons of people because he's evil. And it's really funny seeing Ezekiel Rage, like, using a forklift and driving around a forklift menacingly and trying to attack them with it.
Yeah.
It's really enjoyable. It reminded me of Shenmue.
yeah,
only
totally.
There's no menacing. Shenmue, you use a forklift and it's a forklift. You're not attacking anyone. But this guy's like trying to kill him with a forklift. And then like, just like seeing him loading his plane with nerve gas barrels, cargo plane using a forklift, like you brought it up. It's like, that's just so demystifying. Like, it's so silly for one thing to see him in a forklift.
Yeah. He looks like Skullface from,
he looks exactly like Skullface from Metal Gear Solid 5.
Yeah. And
quality villain.
And it is just, yeah, it's weird to see a villain that is so costumed and so, I guess, super villainy, doing menial tasks to carry out their supervillain plan. Like,
and he has no henchmen in that episode, so it's just
right.
Him. It's like, oh, well, I'm in my like trench coat and like cool, like, I don't know, Day of the Dead hat thing and like mask, and I'm just gonna get in a forklift and do some busy work.
Yeah, right. And it's the sort of thing, like, I can't imagine watching, for example, I don't know, Lex Luthor, like, crate up.
Or the Joker. Like,
yeah, right. The Joker set up his own bombs. Like, there's something about it that's just really strange to even picture.
Just any supervillain in a forklift. I just want you to picture that in your mind. Like, that's fantastic.
Yeah, there's something about forklifts that's inherently funny to me. And
yeah, they're already really stupid, doofy little vehicles.
Right. I think Ezekiel Rage is kind of a weird thing for me because maybe this will be explored later in the show, but I really don't personally connect the dots between him being a former like CIA operative or whatever and, you know, not getting picked up because there's too much heat on him or whatever. And becoming this crazy religious zealot, like, I feel like there's a missing connection there that I'm not really getting.
That's true. There is no real, like, religious connection with the backstory that would explain why he's so, I don't know, so insanely out there. Except, I guess you can try and connect the dot on your own and just be like, well, I guess he lost his mind. Like,
yeah, right. But like
crazy and the betrayal and all that. But yeah, it's not, there's not like a neat little thing there to connect it.
Well, it's not even that there's not a neat little thing, but like he's not just a lone crazy zealot. He has like a cult following. Like,
it's true.
How did that happen? I mean, to be fair, this could be explored later in the show. So I don't want to say like it's not, but for me, and also I just find, like, to be honest, I find that kind of over the top religious firebrand stuff to be kind of, I don't know, obnoxious in a way. Like, I just don't find it that interesting or I don't know.
I thought it was really cool for a kid's show to have a character who basically is like a, I don't know, like a Baptist preacher or something, only, you know, evil. Like, of course, he's not preaching Christianity or, like, preaching false Christianity or anything. But it's very themed after, like, a crazed Baptist preacher.
I mean, I'm not going to, you know, I think you're right to an extent. But at the same time, I don't know, sometimes to me, and this is just by my own personal thing, but sometimes to me it comes across as, like, very smug atheist.
I don't really see it myself. One thing about Ezekiel Rage also is that he just survives. Like, every episode he's in, the two episodes he's in, he most certainly dies and then survives with no explanation. The first one you see, he's in a fucking space station that crashes to Earth and he just survives. And the next one, he's in a cargo plane that smashes directly into a cliffside, and he survives. I assume. I believe he's supposed to recur through the whole season.
Yeah, right. I mean, this is an interesting thing. I wonder if, because also the episode that shows his backstory is not, I believe it's supposed to be a prequel and to show kind of his, you know, the first time the Quest team encounters him, because they don't seem familiar with him and he doesn't like have followers, as we were saying. I'm wondering if there's some, like, maybe the religious thing is the fact that he survives all this stuff.
He's like just so incredibly lucky. He's like, I have to be blessed by God.
Yeah, right. That would be an interesting, an interesting thing for the character to do. I'm sure that doesn't happen, but that's, I guess, what I'm going to be rooting for. So we've talked about a couple episodes, but let's get into just some individual moments in the show that are pretty enjoyable or completely atrocious. I will say, I guess, start by saying that the catchphrases in this show are slamming, one could say. Slamming seems to be a catchphrase. And
Johnny's catchphrase is fucking slamming. Slamming! And I mean slamming! Like, oh man, it's
great. It's really weird. And, I mean, I guess it's not weird. It's just super 90s, frankly.
Yeah.
And another catchphrase that seems to crop up from time to time is, this is too strange for school, which is just, like, there's something about some of the phrases in this show that feel just slightly off. And it's like,
yeah,
I guess averting cliche, but occasionally coming into this just weird thing where it's like a cliche adjacent.
Yeah.
So it just sounds strange.
Yeah. And Race Bannon, like, his He has these, like, metaphors all the time that are just terrible. He just makes these, like, really stupid, like, dad joke metaphors. And with things like, you guys look like a couple kerosene cats in hell.
There's similes,
which,
technically.
He said hell, which is crazy.
He basically has a bunch of similes that he uses, kind of Western-y similes, like,
yeah.
Like a chocolate fire screen, like a chicken wire submarine. It's a lot of stuff about how X is useless as blank.
Yeah. Chicken wire submarine, which is like, that's so close to like a submarine with a screen door on it, which is like a phrase I've actually heard. It's always, just like you said, it's always like kind of adjacent to something that people say.
Yeah, and another thing that I've found that I like a lot about this show is Jesse Bannon is basically the, like, badass character.
Yeah.
Like, there are several instances where she just kind of loses her shit. I mean, in the Escape to Quest World episode, for example, after Surt has trapped Race and Dr. Quest, she incidentally is the one who brings up that Surt may still be alive, but only by saying that she wishes he was still alive so she could kill him.
Yeah.
Later on in the series, she, like, holds a gun to one of his henchmen. It's...
Yeah, yeah. Quest, like, tricks one of them, is like, luckily for you, I'm not really into guns. And she's like, but I am. I don't have a problem with them. And she's, like, holding him up with a fucking submachine gun. It's, like,
yeah,
pretty
right.
Badass. She's definitely... And it makes sense. You know, she's definitely Race's daughter. Race being, like, the action man.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Quest. I didn't really think about it in those terms.
Jesse comes off as, like, a total badass. The show's kill count is, like, just seems kind of high as it is. Like... I mean, of course, it's always, like, off-camera shit, but you get, like, you know, implicit people being killed by elephants and impaled. Like, these poachers just get fucked up at the end of that one episode.
Yeah, right. And to be fair, you know, this was made for cable networks, so it makes sense that it would be, you know, a little violent and, like, maybe a little dark and be willing to say kill.
Or hell.
Yeah, right. But it is kind of strange coming off of the, you know, sanitized network edit for Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah,
where
right.
A show that is incredibly violent is so toned down. Like, compared to that, you know, compared to Johnny Quest, that shit looks like Blue's Clues. Like, it's so sanitized.
I mean, it's toned down, and Dragon Ball Z was toned down in, like, when they talk about it, but, you know, the action itself is probably a bit more intense than stuff you'll find in Quest.
Yeah, it's a lot. I mean, it's a lot more gun stuff in Johnny Quest.
Yeah.
It's also kind of interesting to note that they use guns, like, not laser guns.
Yeah.
They're straight up weapons that fire bullets.
Yeah. It's pretty cool, actually. It just makes it seem more, I mean, yeah, makes it seem more realistic. Like, that's what they wanted, that's what they went for.
Yeah, and as I said earlier this episode, I'm very curious to see how the show changes when it gets into, like, the second season. But I guess let's talk about our impressions of the show so far. Obviously, we've sort of gone over it a little bit, but how are you feeling about it right now?
I quite enjoy it. It's, you know, the Quest World stuff is not great, but it's definitely not as frequent as I had thought. I remember as a kid, like, always being, like, disappointed when there's no Quest World stuff in episodes.
Yeah, of course. Total.
And now it's the opposite.
Now.
yeah, exactly. I like the variety that the show brings about, too. Like, there's every different episode is a completely different setting, usually dealing with different themes and, you know, different kind of moral quandaries and stuff like that, too. Although, like, you know, of course, there's always, like, there are some things that remain constant. Like, there's many of the episodes involve Quest and Bannon just freaking out because their kids are gone.
Yeah, right.
Because their kids are gone on an adventure. and they don't know where they are, and they're like trying to search him down. That happens like 3 or 4 times. The variety of the show and the action, and I think the dialogue is also just more adult-oriented or more mature than most kids shows of the time, and I think it makes it, I mean, you know, not slamming, but I mean, like, you know, the general dialogue related to the plot and like the serious themes and stuff.
Yeah, it's slamming is just 90s. Yeah. As like an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, like
slamming is so funny because it's so out of place, kind of.
Yeah, well, it's what the most obviously dated thing outside of the horrifying Uncanny Valley CGI, like,
and the most obvious like kid thing.
Yeah, I guess.
It's like no one says anything like that. Like Haji is just like he's always just saying like different philosophical things that everyone seems to ignore, and Jesse doesn't seem to really have a catchphrase. But,
yeah, at least not yet. She's just but, super badass. Like that's her catchphrase.
Yeah,
is
yeah.
being cool.
But you know, Johnny's the only one who has to like yell something when something exciting happens. Slamming.
Yeah, right. I think personally, I'm not super into it. It is much more enjoyable than I expected it to be. And I think it's interesting how doing something as simple as aging these characters up like 3 or 4 years can vastly improve. I mean, compared to Johnny Quest versus the cyber insects, yeah. I would watch Questworld over that shit. And
yeah. This is far superior.
Yeah, but by leaps and bounds superior, like, to an extent that it's kind of crazy to me because I was sort of expecting more of that, and it's actually kind of good, like at least in the sense of, you know, a 90s kids show cartoon.
Sure.
It's much better than I thought it was going to be, much better than I think it necessarily, I don't, anyone would expect it to be.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just think, especially coming off of the cyber insect stuff, I think pretty much everything's handled better. I'm glad to see that there aren't a ton of Questworld episodes. However, if there's one thing about the show for me that's still kind of a sticking point, it's that obviously it's become cliche for me to say this at this point, but I like villains in shows. This show has 2 recurring villains, but most of the episodes are kind of dealing with a villain, like a villain of the week, more or less.
Yeah.
And
typically like poachers or, I don't know, like some kind of, some like, or military guys going too far or something like that. Just kind of typical villain of the week kind of fare.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure I'd say typical necessarily, because I can't, like, poachers as the villains in a kid's show, I feel like, isn't typical at all.
Really? I feel like I've seen it everywhere.
Really?
Maybe. I just watched too much Captain Planet.
Oh, yeah. To be fair, that is a total Captain Planet thing.
Clapton Planet? That's my fan site for Eric Clapton.
Oh man, that's I was just great. Thinking like Eric Clapton voicing Captain Planet, or just go. Captain Planet being modeled after him.
Yeah. Well, he was. Eric Clapton is green.
Yeah, more teal correctly. Than green. He has green hair.
Teal. He's green hair. Yeah.
And he's made from your powers combined. But I think it's. The standard villain of the week kind of stuff for sure gets a little boring to me. So it's in this weird like zone with the show for me where I prefer the episodes that involve the villains, but at the same time, I think that Ezekiel Rage is kind of annoying. Like he pushes a particular annoyance button for me, and Surd is inevitably linked to Questworld, which, like, I don't want to continue stating this, but looks extraordinarily dated, of course.
It's absurd.
I guess.
Absurd.
Oh, great.
Of course. Wow.
Gonna cut that out.
Clapton Planet.
Yeah, overall, though, I'm kind of lukewarm on the show, although I will say it is much better than I expected it to be.
And lukewarm on everything.
Yeah, because frankly, I don't want to, I don't know, like, I'm watching kids' TV, like, I don't feel like recommending to adults who listen to this podcast, yeah, definitely watch fucking Johnny Quest.
We watched every episode of Power Rangers in Space.
Yeah, sure, but we're idiots.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Yeah, but I don't know. I'm liking it more than I expected to.
Yeah.
Once again.
Yeah, and it's, you know, just as far as these 10 episodes, I'd recommend a revisit.
Yeah, sure. I like to wait until the season, I guess, is over to talk sure. about that, but...
Yeah, I just mean, yeah, at least for this.
Yeah, so far it's looking good for the real adventures of Johnny Quest.
The real adventures of Johnny
Quest. Let's talk about a bet, because we didn't make a bet this week, and, you know, we got to figure out some way to pick what shows we're going to watch.
You know what we got to do. We got to count the slammin's.
Yeah, of course. Obviously, the number of times that anybody says slammin' as a catchphrase is the clear bet.
Including if he says... And if he says slammin' and I mean slammin', which he did once, that counts as two.
Well, yeah, obviously.
Okay. Okay, good. Glad we can get that settled.
Yeah, as far as the number, I'm thinking... I mean, I'll go first since I chose this series, so I'll choose the lower number, I guess. I'm going to say six times.
Six.
Yeah, like, it was five in these 10 episodes. I don't expect the rate of slamming to increase by that much.
Can I go under your number?
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
Yeah. God, that's so hard, though. Six seems good. I don't... I want to go with four. Four slammins.
Yeah, four, I think, sounds reasonable. I think those are good picks for numbers. Numbers of slammins.
Yeah.
Well,
I think they're just good numbers in general.
Yeah, four and six, real primes. Yeah, so next week we're going to be getting to the next 10 episodes of Johnny Quest. Obviously, that's 11 through 20. But for now, this has been Hyperspace Broadcasts. I'm Michael Doak.
I'm Peter Eby.
And be sure to revisit us next week.
Slammin'.
Hey everybody, just here with some acknowledgements. First off, the bumpers were taken from the video Toonami, The Real Adventures of Johnny Quest Bumpers, 1997, uploaded to YouTube by Grand Dad Network. Is that a network of grandfathers or a bunch of really cool dads? I'm not sure. The music, as always, is Vapor Dive In by Onatech off the album Onatech Instrumentals Volume 6. You can find more of their music on SoundCloud, and you should, because obviously it's fucking awesome. It's playing right under my voice right now. Rights were secured through Jamendo.
This is fucking Looney Tunes opening.
Weird version of it.
Alrighty. That's all, folks.